blowing. There are open windows. Candles still burning themselves down. And the gorilla cleaners have arrived in the Buddha Hall. The gorilla meditators have arrived in the Buddha Hall. In 1981, or maybe it was 1982, I went on a pilgrimage to Korea with Sunim. And near the beginning of the pilgrimage, we went to see Soncho Sunim, who was the supreme patriarch of the Chogi, the Zen order in Korea. And he lived in a hermitage at the top of the mountain, above the monastery called Haeyeonseo. So we stayed in the monastery overnight, and then the next day prepared to go up to pay our respects to Soncho Sunim. And when we arrived at the gate, we were told that we had to do 3,000 prostrations in order to see him. So Sunim took us into one of the little rooms of the hermitage, and he said, "Well, will you do it?" And it was a case of, what can you say at that point? So the women had to go back down to one of the nuns' hermitages while the men stayed there. And all night we did these 3,000 prostrations. And it was quite an experience. I remember getting so stiff in my legs, and the place where we were doing the practice was on a high place, and to get to the Wajong field, the outhouse, well, you had to climb down all the stairs and go out into the cabbage patch, and there it was. And I just was so stiff that I was crawling down the stairs backwards, sort of crawling down the stairs. And when I got out to the cabbage field, where there was this Wajong field, this outhouse, and it looked beautiful. It had a tile roof, and it had a beautiful sign of calligraphy. And I was with Jodwan. She was my Dharma sister, who had gone to Korea from Canada to train as a nun. And I said, "What does it say?" And she looked at it, and she said, "Pavilion for relieving anxiety." It was just the place I needed to be. So we finished the 3,000 prostrations going all through the night. It took about 10 hours. And then had a bath, a wonderful bath, and went back up to see Soncho Sunim. And the guys were still doing their prostrations. So we waited. And then we all went in. And it was a very humble picture. He's done. Patched up clothing and sort of red cheeks. A little gray stubble grown up. There, a big smile. And we did three more prostrations and he just killed him. So yes, in respect to him, of course. And that's when I was given the practice. What is it? It's not Buddha, it's not mind, it's not thing that keep you going on like this. Then what is it? And he pointed his finger at me. And he said something in Korean. And I turned to Sunim and he says, "He wants you to come back with the answer." You know what? He's died. Some 1983, I think he died. That was Kusan Sunim. A little later than that, he died. So I didn't get that chance, and it's kind of a good thing because I'm still working on it. This is our practice. This wonderful thing that we're doing is a lifetime. Never stops. lifetime after lifetime puzzle. Echoes from Mount Gaya is the name of the book of teachings from Sancha Sunam. And I'd like to read you a couple of paragraphs. It's from the chapter called The One Thing. There is one thing. It existed before the earth and skies came into being, and it will exist long after they all have disappeared. The heavens and earth could appear 1,000 times and be destroyed 10,000 times, but this one thing would not change at all. And he says much. It is so brilliant and astounding that even the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas cannot look at it when they raise their eyes. They can open their mouths, but cannot describe it. They and all our other Zen predecessors become merely blind and mute in the face of it. All one can do is to become enlightened to it and then become totally free-flowing in it. An early Buddhist in Korea, Ekadon, said he actually gave his life for Buddhism. He said it takes unusual people for unusual things. At that time, Buddhism was new in Korea. And here we are again, Buddhism new here. Different circumstances. Still, it takes unusual people for unusual things. Have you ever thought of yourself as unusual? No way.
No.
Here you are. Here we are. And we're in the process of having a direct experience with that which is already ours. And I think each of us has to be a kind of gorilla. A gorilla goes in unusual ways to get things done. Our Venerable Sammo Sunam has been called a gorilla renovator. Because he goes in through all these buildings and one way or another gets them transformed. He's had a little more trouble in New York City because of the building code. But still, he's got that great gorilla renovator spirit, that great gorilla bodhisattva spirit. And it's about just keeping going with great resolve, just over and over again. So I have a little story. In the 1980s, Dorim, who is a member of the Do family, Doan is in that family, came to the Ann Arbor Temple from Mexico as a visitor for a few months. She was she had really wonderful hands, eyes, and was just very good with cooking. She would make beads and she would cook the squash flowers in this beautiful way. So there was in our little store this Buddha, which looked like it had come out of a dime store. It was just this kind of ugly plastic. You know, there's something about these Buddhas that's not ugly plastic, at least to me. And our Buddha in Ann Arbor actually is even less gold than this. It's quite subtle. And so I said to Dorim, do you think you could do something with this ugly plastic? She said, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, when I feel this Buddha has such great weight. I think if we get this ugly plastic off, it will be even more beautiful. Oh, yes, Sukha. That's my name, Sukha, then. And so she said, I'll see what I can do. So then she came to me and she said, you know, will it be all right if I use Ajax on the Buddha? The kind of the Buddha is supposed to be, you know, kept very carefully and seen very carefully. Aja. Well, just very carefully. So she very carefully applied Aja. Nothing. Didn't change. Still that dinosaur Buddha. Look. What about steel wool? It sort of was, I thought, felt hurt myself by the mention of it. Carefully. So she did the steel wool treatment and nothing happened. Still looked like dinosaur. So she said, well, what about if I bury it in the garden? Put it in the garden, and we went about our lives for a couple of weeks. And I think she watered it. that would be really, you know, composting process. She dug it up, and it was still that dinosaur. So, in the midst of all this, she fell in love with Doryu, another member of the Doe family. The Doan is one of the surviving ones who's still around. And she came to me one day and she said, you know, Fuka, I'm going to go and live with Doryu for a while. I was sorry to see her go. That's what it is like, all these people. Could I take the Buddha and keep working on it? And I really recognized her sincerity, so I said, sure. And then she still came to the temple every day. So she would be at Doryu's house, and they practiced together. He was a strong practitioner, too. And she would come, and she would make reports to me, and she said, I put the Buddha on the roof. What did you put the Buddha on the roof for? She said, well, you know, the moon shining on it might make a difference. Well, and I know the sun bleaches clothes, so maybe it will do something in the daytime, you know, with the sun. I said, well, carefully. Okay. So the weeks went on. And one morning she turned up and she said, I did it. That was great. Great to ask her what she did. She said, the Buddha looks simply beautiful. What did you do? Well, she said, I carefully put it in Drano. I mean, I just, you know what Drano is? It's just a soap that unplugs toilets, and it's the most caustic acid around. So I felt like I had had the Drano treatment myself, but I was kind of embarrassed that, you know, I was allowing these things to go on. And she got it. She showed me. I said, please bring it. So she showed me. And the Buddha had been polished right down to gray. Gray. It was his gray stone. Except that in the folds of the robe, there was still gold. So it was simply beautiful. It was simply beautiful in its ordinariness now. So she said to me, I know this is supposed to be in the temple store, but I'd like to buy it. And I said, you don't have to buy it. You can have it. It's just, it's your Buddha. It's in your... So she took it. And the time went by, and she and Doryu decided to get married. This is a love story in a lot of ways. And she, because she wasn't on any kind of permanent sort of legal way in the United States, had to go back to Mexico. So I remember the day that she left, because she had to get the proper paper route so she could come back, that he turned up with his little funky, battered up old Volkswagen, and she was there, and they said goodbye and went into the temple as is the custom, and made three bows to pay respects and bow out to Buddha. And off she went. And so the months went by, and it was the yard sale. We had this huge, we call it the Great Green Recycling Yard Sale in Ann Arbor. And in those days, we used to just take stuff off the streets. People would give us boxes of stuff. We never knew what we were getting, you know? Students throwing out their stuff, people throwing out their stuff, and we would fix it up. Dorim had been through one yard sale, and she was the best at fixing up things, you know? But she'd already gone back to Mexico. And I like to look in the boxes and open the garbage bags, because I like to see. It's kind of like treasures that we're getting. So we have these steps outside the back door of the temple, and there's a lot of bags there, so I sat down on the steps and I started opening. And there was one bag that had a lot of kind of nice stuff. I don't wonder where. It didn't look like it came off the street. And everything was wrapped in newspaper. And one of the things I opened, and I looked at it, and it was that Buddha. I mean, I would know that Buddha anywhere, just because of the gold in the folds. It's very beautiful. How did it get back to us, kind of in the garbage? Dorim is in Mexico. I assume she probably took it to Mexico. So we put the Buddha in a good place. And a few years later, Dorim came to Yongmen Junction here. And when after Yongmen Junction, the first thing I asked her, what did you do to that Buddha? We got it back in the garbage. And she said, because once she had gone to the hospital to be with one of our members who was there, she said, I decided to take him, Buddha. So I left him. And then he died. And then his wife wrapped it up, sent it to the yard sale. She didn't know that it should have been sent back to the altar. But that's okay. It doesn't matter where you get the Buddha from. It's that everything's like that. So I tell you this story because it's a beautiful story of, well, you can make what you want from it in a certain sense. But it's a beautiful story of over and over again and yet again. And once again, practice and you shine. But for us, shining is just being a good old ordinary person and really enjoying an ordinary life. And happy with that. So the things which can be so challenging, okay. And in some sense, that story is about us letting go of all of our dinosaur stuff that gets built up and put on to imbalance because we forget who we really are. So that's what this has been about, for us to have an experience, to taste the practice for the love. Realize. I'm so grateful that you came to do this. You're unusual people. You're wonderful. I would not be here if you would not be here. This is something we are all in together. Always. memorize, do you?
I cultivate a heart of enlightenment and realize the great way.
I go for refuge to the Dharma. And
with all beings.
I will penetrate
the teaching
and uncover oceans of wisdom.
Let's do it again. I go for refuge to the Dharma.
And resolve with all means, I will penetrate the teachings and uncover oceans of wisdom.
I go for refuge to the Sangha.
And resolve with all means,
I will seek peace and harmony for the many.
Transform this world into the land of its ages.